Second reading is from the book of Acts, chapter 9, verses 32 to 43. Please listen for the word of the Lord for you today. Now as Peter went there, and there among all of the believers, he came down also to the saints living in Lydda. Here he found a man named Ananias who had been bedridden for 8 years, for he was paralyzed. Peter said to him, "Ananias, Jesus Christ heals you. Get up and make your bed." And immediately he got up. And the residents of Lydda and Sharon saw him and turned to the Lord. Now in Joppa, there was a disciple whose name was Tabitha, which in Greek means Dorcas. She was devoted to good works and acts of charity. At that time, she became ill and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in a room upstairs. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples who heard that Peter was there sent two men to him with the request, "Please come to us without delay." So Peter got up and went with them, and when he arrived, they took him to the room upstairs. All of the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing their tunics and other clothing that Dorcas had made while she was with them. Peter put all of them outside, and he knelt down and he prayed. He turned to the body and said, "Tabitha, get up." Then she opened her eyes, and seeing Peter, she sat up. He gave her his hand and helped her up. Then calling the saints and the widows, he showed her to be alive. This became well known throughout Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. Meanwhile, he stayed in Joppa for some time with a certain Simon, a tanner. The word of the Lord. I have to say that I had fun learning about Tabitha this past week. She's a character that I had forgotten about. As the author of Luke Acts often does, her story comes in a pair of stories. The first one we heard about was about the male character Ananias, but his story is told in such brevity and hers with such detail that even for Luke, who reports the women in his text as witnesses and apostles, but not as heroes and leaders, it seems as though we are to sit up straight and pay attention to her story. Her story is important. Excuse me, I had this problem at the first service. We are given two different translations of her name, representing that she travels and lives across the bounds of community. Tabitha is the Aramaic of her name, an ancestral version of Hebrew. We are also given her Greek name, Dorcas, which means gazelle. I had also forgotten what a gazelle was, so I looked that up. It is an antelope. They're known as swift animals, mostly found in the grasslands, living across Africa and the savannas in Saudi Arabia. So I imagine this gazelle running fast and free, defying attempts to be kept in one place, while also being deeply grounded in experiencing the land and experiencing the community all around. When I read Tabitha's story, I hear echoes of our upcoming McClendon Scholar in Residence, Professor Willie Jennings, in his book, The Christian Imagination, Theology, and Origins of Race. I have just begun to get into the book, but I commend it to you. It is a deep and educational read. He draws back to the days of the slave trade, and he extends that drawing into the opportunities of land and privilege that we also have today. And he suggests by ignoring and passing over the histories of those who have been oppressed in the name of Christian faith, we have become divorced from land and community, resulting in nothing less than a loss of our own creatureliness. Rather than claiming the land as God's, we give up the land to the market forces and commodity prices, so those who have means are kept in and those who don't are pushed out. As our space and sense of place becomes divided, we then become further divided with one another. I think we've seen this playing out in our election cycle. We tend to only coexist with those who we already know, those who we already agree with, and those whose lives and opinions mirror our own. Jennings suggests in order to reclaim our creatureliness, we are and to live into who we are truly called to be, he offers us a transformative vision of creation where we are invited to, quote, undiscovered identities found only through interaction across language, landscape, and peoples. These interactions across the bounds of space and community then invite us into new patterns of life and relationships that involve deeply investing in one another, opening our whole lives and our love to one another. And that is where I see Tabitha. In her work with her hands making clothes for the widows, she deeply connects with the land, and then in that deep connection, she reconfigures the space around her. And in that reconfiguring of space, she shows us what it means to be an Easter community. She is an Easter person, after all. She is a person who has heard about or has perhaps even seen the risen Christ. She's a person living into Jesus' vision of God's kingdom on earth, where all are reconciled based upon this God, life-giving kind of love. And yet, she lives perhaps painfully, perhaps resolutely, and I think even defiantly, within the person-created systems of power and oppression all around her. We remember that the Roman Empire still rules the day. There are deep divisions within groups, slave and free, Gentile and Jew, male and female. And despite a very firm belief that women were in fact disciples of Jesus Christ, and despite every modern effort to lift up the stories and emphasize these good works of act and faith, these women were still ultimately bound to the rules of their society, bound to their husbands and fathers. Equality had not yet come. And of course, we are well on our way here, and I celebrate that as a woman, I can be ordained in the Presbyterian Church. But as I hear Tabitha's story, I keep hearing the refrain of the overall state of those around our world who suffer from oppression today. This past week, we celebrated Equal Pay Day, and I think about how even today, women in our country make 79 cents to every dollar earned by men, or a 22% wage gap, 21%, or a 78%. Anyway, the numbers are slightly different depending where you read. The pay gap increases for Native Americans, Black and African American women, and most starkly for Latinas, who one article writes, over a lifetime, they lose $1 million earned dollars, $1 million on average lost just by virtue of being a woman. As I listen to Tabitha's story, I hear those who live with and strive against oppression, and I keep in mind these crosses that these women and other people around the world bear. Earlier in Acts, I remember, and you can remember too, of that critical moment when the disciples were supposed to feed the widows, but they want to go out and preach the gospel, they want the starring role, and they forget about these widows. You remember, widows would be synonymous with being poor. Paul uses the word stricken for widows throughout his letters. They have no way to raise themselves up. But Tabitha has heard this call, and as she has taken it into her personal charge, the care of those in her community who are most in need. And she would have known people all across her community, the traders, the herders, the farmers, and their large families that would have made this labor-intensive work possible. She would have known the women who were once married but lost their husbands, therefore losing all rights to land and vote. She would have known the children too, these children who are unnamed, but surely they were here. They're not mentioned, but of course they had children, and they grow, these children who had lost their place in society because their mothers had too. She would have known the women who were taken advantage because of their situation. And so, connecting herself to the land from the process of raising the food for the sheep, to the sheep themselves, to shearing the sheep and preparing the wool, to weaving them on the womb with quality and care, she served God through the work of her hands. It was assumed that sewing was domestic work. In fact, David, you remember the great King David, he writes that he wished that no man would ever have to sew. It was the worst thing he could imagine for a man. But she recovers that history. She takes the work that was thought to be just within the women's realm, and she redefines it, and she turns it, and she brings it to center stage. She brings all who are overlooked and passed by into the light of the risen Christ. I think of generations of women and men, too, who have used their hands to serve God, especially those women who have sewn. I think of clothes passed down from generations, knitted, especially clothes for children. They don't usually, children grow, so they don't wear them for very long, so you can pass down from generation to generation, remembering the people who came before, often people who fought against oppression. I think of women who made clothes for other parts of the community who didn't have enough, or those quilts made from leftovers, men's shirts cut up into a bedspread, something worn turned into something beautiful. Here at the church, especially in the Radcliffe room, I think of the generations of 7:15 in the morning bagel cutters, clothes hangers, haulers of things. After service, I think of the pew straighteners, the coffee cup taker outers. Before service, the bulletin stuffers. During the week, the dishwashers, the bulletin board fixer-oners, the email deliberators, the cookie makers and the procurers, and as you go out in the park for coffee today, the coffee pourers. These are jobs that often are not proclaimed. Sometimes they go unnoticed, but these are the jobs, the works of our hands that knit us together as a community. On Friday, I had the privilege of attending a few workshops through the Compassion, Peace, and Justice Days hosted here at our church by our denomination. I had the privilege of listening to a presentation by Dominic Molden from 1DC, you should Google them, and lawyer Will Merrifield of the Washington Legal Clinic speak about their work supporting one community who live just above the Congress Heights metro station. The community has lived there for decades. One tenant reported that when he moved in, it was so clean he could eat off the floor. And they worked to keep it clean because they were proud of their community. But in recent years, as the owner has tried to get them to move out to make a better profit, and trying to get this building ready for sale, rats have come in, mold has grown, and leaky sewage is all over the basement. The developers want to turn the building into something that would make more of a profit, but those who live there would have to make at least $28 an hour to afford market rate housing in DC. They don't. It has gotten so bad that the owner has taken off the locks from the building and sort of welcomed in other parts from the community that this is a place for violence and for all of those things that we wouldn't want to happen within a community. You would think that most residents would leave in such a situation, and many have, but 20 have stayed because through the work of 1DC, they have become organized, inspired, and educated to their rights. They've heard the message, stay, don't leave. We believe in you. So to make a long story short, and if you want to read the longer version, it's in the post. What would have been a story, an all too common story of those being pushed out to make way for more development. Now through the support of the community, the literal investment in the land, They're working to build 150 more units of affordable housing. They are saying, we are important. We're not throwaways. We will stand, we will stay, and we will invest here in the land and the community. I love Tabitha's story because she reminds me of all who we forget, who we underappreciate, and we look past. In her story, I'm inspired and I'm taught about the risen Christ. In her hard work clothing the widows of the community, she brings them back from death to life. So it is no wonder that they wash her body, even though this is a common act throughout the biblical times, but it's never mentioned in the New Testament. But I think it's mentioned here because the widows and Tabitha were in such intimate relationship with one another. So it's no wonder that the widows weep and send those two men to go and get Peter quickly. And it's no wonder that when Peter arrives, they proudly show off the work of her hands. And so when Peter comes rushing in at that moment, it's also no wonder that his presence is minimized. It isn't about the societal norms where the man was in charge or about the power of these selected apostles of Christ. Peter does not represent himself, but he represents Jesus Christ. Just as Tabitha had acted as the risen Christ for all of those women, literally pulling them out of the death of wretched poverty, the risen Christ appears to Tabitha, resuscitating new life within her. And so we read this story of this great woman, and we are charged to see who it is that we overlook, who has already become the risen Christ to us. Who has connected you to the land? Who has connected you to community? Who has challenged your assumptions and helped you see things anew? Who has helped you see promise in yourself when you don't see promise in yourself? And also, how might we be the risen Christ to others? Is there power in our own selves that we have overlooked? And how might we radically cross those bounds of what is considered acceptable to usher in this new vision of God's creation? And so this charge is as much as it is for me as it is for you. We are to get grounded to learn about the land and who was here before, who suffered here, and also who celebrated here, who may have already been displaced and who we ourselves may have displaced, who we might be displaced by. And then we are to dive deep into this community, learning the names and stories and best moments of each other, the moments that really matter, that define who we are. And then we're to take that leap of faith that Tabitha did and step out of place and even defy expectations that we have of ourselves. We're to recognize the risen Christ in someone else, and we're to recognize that opportunity to be the risen Christ to someone else. And then in that deep joining of personhood, we lean into our calling to be part of God's beloved creation. Amen.